Sarcoma Stories is a podcast created by Sarcoma Foundation of America to highlight the voices and experiences of patients, survivors, and care partners. After each episode, you can connect with others in the sarcoma community on our Sarcoma Stories podcast Facebook group to delve deeper into the episode's topics. You can find information on this specific subtype or your subtype, as well as all our podcast episodes on SFA's website, www.curesarcoma.org. Links are in this episode's description. Follow us on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts to stay up to date on the latest episodes. Thanks for listening. On this episode, we're talking with Natasha Allen, a 28-year-old synovial sarcoma patient. We discuss everything from getting diagnosed to her treatment journey, including clinical trials, as well as how she has used social media as a therapeutic tool and way to connect with others in the sarcoma community. Please pardon, there are a few audio glitches in this episode, and we apologize if this interrupts your listening experience. Let's dive in. Welcome to the Sarcoma Stories podcast. We're so excited to be here with Natasha Allen today. I'm Natasha Nathan. I'm the program manager of engagement and advocacy at SFA and also a rhabdomyosarcoma survivor.
And hi, I'm Brandi Felser and I'm the CEO at SFA.
I'm Natasha Allen. I am 27 years old and I am currently fighting stage 4 synovial sarcoma. And I live in New York and I'm actually working full time. I was thinking about that the other day. I was just like, wow, I went to my radiation earlier this year and I still worked every day.
That is incredible. And I mean, we'll dive into everything, but how has the experience been for you working full time during treatment and managing your appointments?
It's been hard times, and it's sometimes I am kind of happy that I have a full-time job only because, there's some days where I feel like I need to do something, and it kind of gives me something to think about and feel more quote-unquote normal. And then there are some days, like all of last month, where we had a busy time at work. I work in finance. And I was just like, I should have just gone on medical leave just for this month.
Yeah, that's a lot to manage. And I mean, you have quite a following on TikTok as well. Are people surprised to hear that you work full time, are a content creator, and also managing your treatment?
Yes, I think most people kind of assume that I make a lot of money off of TikTok, which I don't. I don't see TikTok as a source of income. It's more of a source to spread awareness and kind of have an online diary of sorts.
I have a question about TikTok. Do you find that, you know, as you mentioned, it's sort of a diary, but do you find it also a therapeutic way to sort of deal with the emotions and everything that's sorting out everything that you're going through in terms of managing, you know, the diagnosis and the treatment and the sarcoma journey?
Yeah, I think that I actually started posting on TikTok right after I was diagnosed in 2020, and it was full pandemic mode, and I had inpatient chemo for stage 3 synovial sarcoma. And I found that it was so lonely in the hospital just because they didn't allow visitors. And I kind of had no one really to talk to or hang out with. So I was just like, I saw TikTok and I was just like, what if I just make kind of like jokey videos about like what I'm going through on TikTok? And before I even had cancer, I would never be the person to post myself on the internet. I didn't even comment because I was just like, I don't exist. I only watch like a kind of ghost. But I found it helpful to make me feel less alone just because some people would interact and be like, hey, I also have a rare sarcoma. Or some people would be like, actually, like my mom, my sister. And there were just some people that didn't have cancer directly in their life, but they still liked the content and
kind of like were rooting for me and kind of became my online friends. So that was nice, especially since I felt very, very lonely in the beginning. So I think when I first started it, it was kind of as just like an outlet and a way to express myself, but also kind of like make sense of what's going on. And I've always been a person that makes dark humor jokes just to kind of keep my, like I say sometimes like to keep myself from crying, but that's like, it's not always that. It's just sometimes I have to make a joke out of something to kind of process it in a way that doesn't really like keep me down too much.
You know, I feel like humor is a coping mechanism many of us at some point find, and I know it was incredibly helpful for me. It can also relate to sharing on social media. I made the decision to share my diagnosis publicly on Instagram about 2 weeks after I was diagnosed, and originally I did this to save my energy with updates and let everybody know all at once what was happening in my life. But I quickly learned how much awareness was needed about sarcoma, and it ended up being a tool I used to educate and advocate and find others in the sarcoma community.
So I think when I originally got the diagnosis, which was in July of 2020, I told my mom a month later that I was going to tell people and I was going to make a post on my Instagram. And she said, "Are you sure?" Because I feel like a lot of older people, but also just like in the Black community or immigrant communities in general, there's this like way of dealing with your own issues. And like that's supposed to be private and you're not supposed to tell other people. And I told my mom that I think I have to, just because I had a sarcoma, and synovial sarcoma specifically was just like so rare that I told myself that I would do a disservice for by like keeping it in and not telling other people, just because I found myself that when I was diagnosed that there were no real I guess resources, like they were, but they were too few. And I didn't see anyone with my cancer. I had never heard of it. And in my head, I was just like, okay, I'll become the person that people can see, like, oh, this person has synovial sarcoma. I do too. Like, now I have found someone that is going through the same thing as I am.
So you've touched on being diagnosed and that synovial is the subtype you have. Can you talk a little bit about your diagnosis journey?
In 2019, I had knee pain in my right knee. I was just about to graduate college in the spring of 2019. And the fall before that, I had a knee surgery on my left knee because I have really bad cartilage in my knee where like my cartilage would just break off. So I had a knee surgery just to like clean up my left knee. And then I did physical therapy and kind of went that route. And then suddenly spring of 2019 was when I started feeling knee pain in my right knee. At that point, my knee wasn't swollen or anything, but it did start hurting. And I asked my doctor, I was just like, hey, like I'm feeling this like really weird knee pain in my right knee. And he was just like, it's probably like plica. So he gave me a shot in my knee for cortisone. And it did help with the pain for a little bit, but then it ultimately didn't do anything. But I was really close to graduating, so I didn't have time to kind of like think about it too much. So I was just like, okay, I'll deal with the pain. I have to graduate, make sure that all my grades are in and whatnot. So in August of 2019, I plugged in with my orthopedic surgeon through my medical group. So my mom and my family we had an HMO. The reason why we had an HMO is because it's cheaper. And at that point, we were all healthy. Yeah, we'll just do like the basic and whatnot. So I went to the only like orthopedic surgeon, or one of the only orthopedic surgeon in the medical group. And he was just like, oh, you've had like the history of knee problems before. Let's plug you in with physical therapy to try to straighten out the knee. And that was kind of like how we were going about it. I did physical therapy and my knee would always come back to kind of the bent position. And after a while, like he did ultrasound and that didn't really show anything. And after I came back from physical therapy with like not a lot of progress, he was just like, okay, we'll do an MRI. We did an MRI November 2019. I didn't get the results personally, but he told me that there was some damage in my right knee and a cyst, which would explain the swelling. And now that it's 2024, we know that that wasn't a cyst. It was actually a tumor. But he went ahead and did a cleanup job on the tumor knee in February 2020, which was right before the pandemic hit. And he told me that he was going to drain the cyst. And if he couldn't, he was going to send it to for a biopsy. So I did the surgery. He said that the cyst at this point was not able to be drained and that he was going to send up for a biopsy. So I kept on going to physical therapy to kind of like work on my knee. My knee started getting bigger and bigger. And I was just like, oh, this is so swollen. Like, what's going on? And I found out later that he never sent it off for a biopsy. Got my appointment in the beginning of July of 2020. And when I went in there, they were like, okay, we're going to do a biopsy on your knee. And it took 3 weeks to get results because within my medical group, they had no idea what it was. So they had to ship it off to another hospital.
Wow, that is such a winding road before you even hear your correct diagnosis. What was the moment you received your sarcoma diagnosis like?
On July 28th, 2020, I walked into my doctor's office by myself because I didn't think it was going to be a big thing. I sat on the bed and he was by his computer on the other side of the room and he was just typing. And I was waiting for him to say something. He didn't even say hi or anything. I was just like sitting. He just was typing. And I was just like, so what were the results? And he said, ovarian sarcoma. And after a while, I was sitting there waiting for him to kind of like tell me what ovarian sarcoma was. And he didn't. So I was like, in my head, I was just like, oh, I need to ask him what ovarian sarcoma is. So I told him, I'm like, what's ovarian sarcoma? And he said, it's a tumor, Google it. And he said that without looking at me with that tone. And I was just like, okay. And then I took out my phone, Googled it. The first thing it says is rare and aggressive cancer. And at that point, I started crying, but I was trying not to cry in front of him. And I was like trying to hold it in. And he started talking and saying like, I'm transferring you to the orthopedic surgeon in oncology in our medical group. I'm just transferring all the paperwork. And he said that I could get my files and my MRI CDs and stuff at the front desk. And as I was walking out, holding in my tears, he tapped me on my shoulder and said, good luck.
Wow. That's quite the journey.
And quite the, and I appreciate you sharing your range of emotions that you went through in that experience as well, and what it felt like for you to be sitting there and being told that you have a sarcoma, and what that felt like for you, especially being alone when you had to hear that news. That's, and it's unfortunate that, you know, we still continue to have challenges with diagnosis with sarcoma today. Although we're working on that, we certainly have ways to go in terms of better diagnosis for people like you in your situation.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a lot to navigate with the medical field as well. Knowing, as you said, you know, perfectly healthy before, were there moments that you were like, this is, I need to advocate for this or that? Or were you just going off of feelings? Like, I know now you probably have a lot of medical literacy from all of this experience, but at that time, what was compelling you to bring up, you know, can we do an MRI? Like, how did you even think to ask that or advocate for the biopsy?
For the MRI specifically, I just knew that ultrasounds usually don't show a lot. And because I had had knee surgeries, I think two of them on my left knee beforehand, I was just like, okay, the way we figured out that my cartilage and my meniscus needed a little work was through an MRI. So I was just like, I need an MRI. So that's the reason why I knew to ask for an MRI. The reason why I asked for a biopsy is because he did mention a biopsy when we did the surgery in February. And I waited at first because the pandemic was going on and I knew that a lot of like the medical system was backed up and focusing on COVID cases. So I instead waited a little bit because I knew that it was hard to even get through the medical office because it was closed at times. But what really pushed me to make an appointment and ask for the biopsy in person was my physical therapist, because we had worked twice to three times a week to get my knee straightened and they couldn't get it fully straight. My knee was getting bigger and my physical therapist said, there's not much more we can do for you. You need to go back to your orthopedic surgeon. That's what pushed me then. But there's things that you don't know that you have to ask for until you're kind of backed into a corner. You're like, hey, so what now? Go back to who can refer you to another way of finding answers.
So now you know you have a sarcoma. I know you eventually moved to a new oncologist, but how do you get there? What's the next step for you?
So the next step is I get referred to the only orthopedic surgeon in oncology in my medical group. And we talk to him and I ask him, I'm like, have you operated on, a synovial sarcoma tumor before? He's like, yeah, a few times. And I was just like, okay. And then the next week I was meeting the medical oncologist. He was saying, okay, so this is usually what we do for synovial sarcoma and whatnot. And I asked him, have you ever treated synovial sarcoma? And he said, no, but I have read about it. Me and my mom, we were walking out of the health center. I was just like, mom, I need a doctor that has treated synovial sarcoma before. And she's like, I agree. And we couldn't see another doctor with our insurance because it was HMO and we had to be in the medical group. But we were kind of desperate, so we went out of network, which cost $1,000. We went to a hospital that's very well known in LA, and we found a doctor that had done synovial sarcoma clinical trials. So we were like, we need to see him. And when I saw him and we talked to him, he was just like, yep, I've done multiple synovial sarcoma cases. He said that his current, like the clinical trial we looked at was close, but he still treats synovial sarcoma. And he told us the statistics and he was just like, yes, there's a big range. We're still looking at it. And one thing that kind of perked my ears was that he says that with his patients, they have a sarcoma board every Thursday where they take someone's tumor and they present it to a bunch of sarcoma doctors within the hospital. And they all kind of give advice or say like, oh, I think this course of treatment is good for this tumor. You should consider this. And when I heard that, I was just like, yes, I need a sarcoma board to look at my my knee. But the problem was we were still in an HMO and my mom was trying to move us to a PPO in August of 2020. And when my mom called the insurance, we were back and forth. It was so exhausting.
I'm so glad you brought up the insurance piece because I really think this is something many sarcoma patients can relate to. And having to work with your insurance company can be really exhausting, but is such a big part of self-advocacy.
Yes. The insurance kept saying, oh, if you want to move to PPO in the middle of the year, your daughter needs to be terminal. And we kept on calling insurance until we got someone that was actually helpful. And she said, well, you can't change your HMO plan until January, you can change your medical group. And that took an effect end of the month. So we only had to wait 2 weeks instead of 4 months. So we waited 2 weeks and then we finally got a covered doctor's appointment with my new oncologist. And he was just like, yes, we're going to do 2 rounds of chemo, which are 5 to 6 days in the hospital with doxorubicin and ifosfamide, 24-hour drips. And he said, we're going to do radiation. And usually radiation is 25 to 30 rounds, but they had a clinical trial that did the same amount of radiation, but in 5 days. And I was just like, perfect. I would like to do less and just like have more intense radiation. And then they extracted my tumor on November 24th, 2020, 3 days after my 24th birthday.
Where did you go to find resources about sarcoma? Like, what did you do when you were diagnosed and you're sort of now having to advocate for yourself?
So the one thing that I did do was Google it. And then I looked up synovial sarcoma. Unfortunately, was just like not the greatest to look at right away was life expectancy. And those numbers weren't great because they were so broad. They were like, oh, in like it, like the numbers always varied depending on what study. And there were not a lot of studies. I tried to kind of disseminate the research papers. Some of the words I was like, okay, I don't know what this means. So I had to Google the words too. And then I kind of looked up, like, I'm like, okay, so what are the chances of recurrence? And I think that a lot of those resources and a lot of those papers made me more scared. And I think the only thing that kind of calmed me down was actually talking to the doctor. So I said, like, hey, I saw these numbers and these numbers. And he said, well, if I am to give you the numbers, these are the numbers, but they're changing all the time. But then my doctor would give anecdotal evidence of saying, like, hey, so like I treated this one patient 10 years ago and they're now cancer free. So it all like depends. And
yeah, I think it's really important to keep those anecdotal stories at the front of your mind. My doctor and I had a similar conversation about statistics, and I found that it actually gave me more hope to listen to the stories and think about those throughout my treatment journey versus read up on the statistics.
Can you talk about how you got involved in clinical trial? Did your doctor offer it to you? Did you search it out on your own? Were you given options and you chose? What did that discussion look like, and how did you make the decision to be on a clinical trial or any treatment that you've chosen to do?
So for when I was stage 3, it was basically just the regular AIM therapy, which was the chemo, radiation, resection for stage 3 synovial sarcoma, which was standard. And my doctor went over it saying like, oh, this is like usually what we do. And I ended up doing extra chemo after my tumor was resected just to kill off any other cancer cells in my body. And so I only did one clinical trial, which was the one for radiation, just because in my head, I was just like, I would love to do fewer rounds of radiation if it still has the same efficacy as 25 to 30 rounds. And I would say the radiation trial went very well because I haven't had a recurrence in my knee since. And when I was stage 4, I was just like, okay, this is not great. I looked up stage 4 synovial sarcoma statistics. One of the numbers that I saw was that when your synovial sarcoma has spread past the primary site, that there's about a 15% chance. This was in 2021, 15% chance that I would be alive in like 5 years. So like the 5-year survival window. So in my head, I was just like, okay, so we're probably going to have to get creative. And my doctor said, well, we do have a promising clinical trial. There were like 2 twin clinical trials, which was the MAGE-4 one and the NY-ESO one. And she did mention that it is less likely for someone of African-American or Hispanic descent to have the HLA. But since it would take 2 months or so to kind of get that back, she said, like, we can't have you not be on treatment because your tumors right now in your chest are rapidly growing. So I was just like, okay, should we do chemo then? And she's like, we do have chemo, but we also have another clinical trial that you can do in the meantime. And I was just like, let's do the clinical trial. Just because in my head, me and my mom, we were like very pro clinical trials just because they are more experimental, but also with a rare cancer and a rare cancer that's stage 4. I was just like, we need to be as creative as possible. And I was just like, yes, let's do the clinical trial. It was a clinical trial that used immunotherapy, Keytruda, and Lenvima, which was an oral drug. And I did that for actually a year, which they said was one of the longest times one of their patients had been on that clinical trial because it had worked. First, my tumors shrunk a little, but then they stayed. It got a lot of skin-based side effects. So I had rashes over my hands, feet, and they were getting painful and I started bleeding. And my doctor kept on asking, hey, like, do you want to go off the clinical trial because it's causing you pain? And in my head, I was just like, I can deal with the pain as long as my tumors are fine. So I kind of pushed it for as long as I could. And then I think the last month of the treatment, there was a slight growth in some of the tumors. And at that point, my feet were bleeding when I was walking and stuff. And I had to like wrap them and whatnot. And I was just like, okay, I think it's going swinging the other way now, like that the treatment is slowly becoming less efficient. And it's not working as well. At that point, we had already gotten the results back, I would say 7 months before I even went off the treatment. And I was negative for NY-ESO, but I was positive for MAGE-4. And my mom was just like, let's go on the MAGE-4 trial now. And my doctor said, I wouldn't recommend it because we are on a treatment now that works. And when we stop this treatment, then like we have fewer eggs in our basket and fewer things to try. So she said, let's see how long this clinical trial works and you can still do the MAGE-4. And in 2023 was when I kind of started doing my leukapheresis, just getting my blood out and having them basically take my white blood cells and engineer them for what is essentially a T cell therapy for sarcoma. And we just had to wait for that to come back. And once that was came back in May, I did all my scans before that, went into the hospital for 2 weeks. The first week was just kind of like draining me of my white blood cell count, which was just a bunch of chemo. The second week was when we were putting in the white blood cells and I was like, okay, great. I'm like, I feel fine. The next day, I was like, oh, I'm getting chills. And I was like throwing up. And then my fever started spiking, which was a side effect of the white blood cells. And my mom called that night and she was like, do you need me to come? And I was just like, didn't want her to come if nothing was wrong. And I was just like, no. Then she was like, are you sure? And I'm like, I'm not sure. And she's like, okay. So she took like train in the morning. At the point where she like arrived, my fever was over 105 degrees. I had chills. My BP was kind of like very low. They ended up giving me a medication that would like help. My mom was very scared and she asked me when I was feeling better. She's like, were you scared? And I was just like, no. She was just like, it was worth it because my tumors did shrink. But I was one of a few people that I guess the clinical trial only worked for a few months. And then I ended up getting like the tumors that I did have in my chest during the time of that clinical trial, they had stayed the same, but I had gotten new tumors and I ended up having to do a biopsy on the new tumors to see like, oh, are they tumors or are they just like spots and nodules? And they ended up being synovial sarcoma too. 2023 was crazy year. Went from one clinical trial to another, had pulmonary embolism, blood clot in my heart. And then at the end of that year, I think one of my tumors grew so that it was pressing on one of my arteries, which is fine now because I got radiation in the beginning of the year.
Wow. It's, you know, just such an extraordinary amount of things to go through and manage at the same time, working full time, being in treatment, managing your care, managing your insurance, going from one treatment to the other, learning about clinical trials, educating yourself. What were the coping mechanisms that helped and supported you during this time? I'm sure there's so many listeners who can relate to the side effects and managing their treatment. And what has helped you? What would you share with others who might be experiencing something similar?
Well, I think everyone kind of has a different way of dealing with things. As you can probably tell by this conversation, I do make jokes here and there. Try to like keep it light, even though like I know that some days it's hard to keep it light. But in my head, I kind of let myself feel what I feel in the moment. And I cry when I cry. I usually, I do have a therapist. I had a therapist before cancer. And now I have a therapist through my hospital. So it's easy to kind of talk about my cancer with her. And she kind of like asked me questions saying like, are you like holding it in? Or like, how are you actually feeling? And I'm like, that's a good question. I'm like, I like have to sit and just kind of check in with myself. Like, how am I feeling? There are certain days where I know I'm like, today is, as the young people say, I mean, I'm also young, I'm 27, but I'm like, today is a bed rotting day, a day where I just stay in bed and like kind of like don't really do anything. But in my head, I know that I'm like, okay, just because I'm not doing anything today and I'm not like doing something on my bucket list or going out or doing all these things that a quote-unquote normal 27-year-old is supposed to do, so I'm taking this time to like recharge, even though like I feel crappy and stuff. I know that it's not going to last forever. So I kind of like tell myself that during the bad days. I'm like, this is not lasting forever. There will be better days. And then when I do have the better days, I'm like, okay, I know I'm going to have a crappy day eventually. Whenever that happens, whether it's tomorrow, next week, next month, I'm like, I need to savor the good days. And I tell myself, I'm like, you are sick. But I also tell myself, you are 27. So it's kind of like two things can be true. Like you can be sick and feel like death, but you can also feel alive. Those days that I do feel alive, I'm like, okay, let's do it. But I don't try to push myself more than I know I can handle. So there's some times where I'm like, I need a wheelchair. I always request a wheelchair in the airport. There was one time where a TSA worker was like, you look healthy enough to walk. And I told him, I was just like, I don't know if stage four cancer is healthy. He shut up really fast. He was just like, and I bet he's never going to say that again to someone.
Yeah.
But there's like the dichotomy of like looking healthy, but like not being healthy. And just like people seeing me out on the street and like in the subway and whatever, they would never, you know, guess that I am sick, but I never like deny it. So whenever I meet new friends, I kind of like low-key just like talk about my life as it is. And I'm like, oh yeah, when I was in the hospital, and they're like, hospital? I'm like, you don't know. And like kind of like have to prepare them. I'm like, well, I have stage four cancer. The one thing I hate about saying it is because their faces change right away. Like it's like it drops and I can't really manage their emotions or how they feel about it. And in my head, I'm like, it's okay. Like I'm like, I'm dealing with it. It's been what, 4+ years of having cancer. I'm like, it's fine. But then I'm also just like very candid about how I feel. Some days I'm like, I feel like crap. I can't come to trivia today. Let's do it next week, hopefully. And I think I get through things by like planning the better days and hoping to kind of like preserve my energy for those better days. So like if you feel crap mentally, like just make sure that like you don't try to like bury it down, let yourself feel it. So it helps to find the people around you that are willing to support and help. It's nice to have people around you, and like you kind of like find the people that are real friends and real family.
Just so many great ways and such introspection, and that you know yourself well of, okay, this is how I'm feeling and I need to adapt to either participate in life or take a rest. I have found such great resources to support you. So if people are interested in connecting with you further, if our listeners would like to connect with you, where would be the best place for them to do so?
I check my Instagram more than my TikTok DM. So for my Instagram, it's Natasha Allen, which is just my first and last name. I do check my TikTok DMs too, which is possibly Natasha. Also my email, I have a few people emailing me too, which is possibly Natasha@gmail.com.
Natasha, if there was one thing that you wish you would have known when you began this journey, and knowing what you know today, for maybe somebody who's newly diagnosed with sarcoma or maybe new to their journey, what would that be?
It's to trust yourself, listen to your body, and remember that you are your biggest advocate. So you have to be that person for yourself, the person that fights for yourself, the person that will speak up, even if you think that, oh, maybe like this is nothing, it's better to be safe than sorry. And always know that whatever you're feeling about your own cancer is the right way to feel about it, because no one can tell you what to feel. You don't owe your emotions to anyone.
That's fantastic last words. Thank you so much for your time today and for sharing your journey with us and for all that you do to raise awareness about sarcoma, because you're right, we have a long way to go in raising awareness for sarcoma and people finding themselves in the same situation with you as I've never heard of it before. And that is what we are attempting to do with this podcast. And thank you so much for being our inaugural guest for Sarcoma Stories. We're so excited to launch our Sarcoma Stories with you, Natasha. So we appreciate all that you're doing. You know, SFA is working very hard to change the time to diagnosis and offering patients more support and empowering patients like you. And you are a great example of an empowered patient advocating for yourself throughout your journey. So thank you for sharing that.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for joining us today. Did this episode resonate with you? You can join the discussion about this episode in our Sarcoma Stories Facebook group, linked in the show notes. If you found this podcast helpful, your feedback is incredibly valuable and helps to create more awareness about sarcoma while sharing vital resources with someone who may need it. Be sure to leave a rating and review. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.